Dodge 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Israel says it is moving ahead with plans for a widespread invasion of Rafah in Gaza, despite President Biden's promise to withhold offensive weapons if the operation was carried out. ABC Chief White House correspondent Mary Bruce with more on the political fallout of Biden's promise.
Some Republicans, including Donald Trump, are accusing President Biden of abandoning a critical ally, but the president insists the U.S. is not walking away from Israel, that his administration will continue to provide for Israel's defense. Meanwhile, this morning, those ceasefire talks have now stalled, Israel insisting that any temporary ceasefire deal must exclude their operations in Rafah.
More police on more college campuses overnight, including the University of Pennsylvania, MIT, and the University of Massachusetts, where pro-Palestinian encampments have been set up. The third week of testimony in Donald Trump's hush money trial will wrap up today. Prosecutors have not yet called their most crucial witness, former Trump lawyer and self-described fixer Michael Cohen. This is ABC News. Crews heading into the mountains near Salt Lake City today. They are hoping to recover two skiers killed by an avalanche on Thursday. A third skier survived, digging himself out of the snow. Kevin Sullivan, just about to make sports history. Details from ABC's Rhiannon Alley.
The 14-year-old has signed a deal with Major League Soccer's Philadelphia Union. If he takes the field for the Union before July 29th, he'll be the youngest player to ever play in a top American sports league.
To be totally honest, I'm a pretty boring kid. I don't do much outside of soccer.
Sources tell The Atlantic Sullivan's deal with the Union is worth more than $500,000 per year. And there's a major clause in his contract. Once he turns 18, he'll be transferred to English powerhouse Manchester City.
Caitlin Clark making her WNBA home debut for the Indiana Fever on Thursday night. She scored 12 points in a preseason win. More than 13,000 fans showed up, about three times the typical crowd for a regular season game. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
What does cheese, beer, and you have to do with local radio?
I know. It's Todd Alba and the Trick V. Olsen's What Makes Wisconsin Great Tour.
To get out of your own little silo and just listen to folks, you find out Wisconsin is pretty darn great already.
It's great to be from Wisconsin, Todd. It's just such a fantastic place.
Miss them in your town, more visits, and your chance to connect coming up.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Trumpster asked the judge and said, hey, can I not come to court because I want to go to my son's graduation? So here now, from the raw story, Trump plans Minnesota fundraiser on the day of Barron's graduation. When I graduated, you have a get-together with family and friends. It's kind of a day. A parent shouldn't just be ducking in and out.
You have to be a parent for that. And he is a parent in name only. A pino.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's U.S. House Republicans say they're tired of fighting with other members of their own party. All five GOP representatives from Wisconsin voted against removing Mike Johnson as Speaker Wednesday. The Republicans' right wing wanted Johnson out over recent bills approving government spending and aid to Ukraine. Former Wisconsin Congressman and U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan says Donald Trump has nowhere to go but down, but that President Biden needs to work his way up.
Trump can't win, but Biden can lose, meaning Trump's polling at his peak pretty much in all the swing states. He's basically polling at the best he has, at the best he can get, and Biden's underperforming everywhere.
Ryan handicapping the presidential race at the Milken Global Institute conference this week. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers crushed the Cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers took early swings at St. Louis starter Sonny Gray's fastball, and it worked. Home runs for Rhys Hoskins, Jake Bowers, Joey Ortiz. On the way to a 7-1 Brewers win, manager Pat Murphy.
Opening the game, three hard contacts to open the game, and then Hoskins, two-run homer, and then Ortiz got him, and you're like, wow. Yeah, that set the tone.
Milwaukee's now beat St. Louis 9 of their last 10 games. NBA, Pat Beverly caught on tape through a ball at a heckling Pacers fan, then refused to take questions from an ESPN reporter in the Bucks' season-ending loss in Indy. Beverly now facing a four-game suspension.
I had not seen that interview. I just heard that that happened, and so we talked about that and then the ball throwing incident. And he made the comment to me about what was being said back his way, and I just said, I get it, but we're coaches and athletes. You just can't do those certain things.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy this morning, becoming mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Our high today, 64, with wind west to northwest at 5 to 15. Tonight, 39. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, 68. On Sunday, sunshine, little breezy, high of 75. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 28.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we recombobulate with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area at 10:33. All show long, we honor Mother's Day with your favorite mom memories. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinair on air.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, that would be me, so let's get this thing going. 7:06 on this Friday. We're going to give away Brewers tickets sometime after 7:07, first after Mr. Bach and I celebrate the magic that is Yacht Rock Fridays getting going today on Up North News Radio. Wouldn't you agree, Yeoman Purser Bach?
Yes, I would. I am the Yeoman Purser person of this boat. A large boat. A boat so big you need a boat to get to it.
Poor Brittany. Just way, our favorite meteorologist has just no idea what we're bringing on here with all this Yacht Rock talk over here.
But it sounds fun.
Brittany, do you know what Yacht Rock is?
Is this music that you play on the yacht?
I'm wrong. It's just no, you're absolutely right. It's just
Do you have a little looking glass standing by?
Of course I do, Pat. One second. Here's a fine example for Brandy. She's a fine girl.
There we go. We're on our way to Catalina now.
You're right.
So, Brittany, this is just us kicking off. So we didn't want to wait till Memorial Day, so we're doing it now. Despite the fact that there's a frost advisory out in many places this morning, we're just getting ourselves in the right frame of mind. And that's going to continue later on in the weekend when there's supposed to be some very gorgeous moments, but maybe a few wet moments before we get there. What are the details, Ms. Merlot?
It sure is a roller coaster. I mean, I love the vibe that you're putting out there. Let's think beach, weather, summer, yes. Even though it hit mid-20s this morning into Northwest Wisconsin.
Nope, moving on.
I don't believe in the weather.
You guys. Fine. Then I'm bringing clouds this afternoon and rain.
No.
Dun, dun, dun.
DJ Flint makes roost ruins everything.
That's what I'm here for. It's what I'm here for, guys. Right. Yes, we are going to see a front march across the state this afternoon, right around 3 o'clock, maybe into Northwest Wisconsin. It'll move southeast through the state, hitting us throughout the afternoon and evening, putting down about a quarter inch of rainfall, maybe some rumbles of thunder in there as well. But tonight is the cool part. If you can, if you get out there and you see any clear skies, there is going to be northern lights, auroras. There's a G4 magnetic storm ongoing throughout this weekend. So the KP index is going to hit 5 tonight, peak at about 8 on Saturday, and drop to a 5 on Sunday. So any clear skies out there this weekend?
Well, now we got to ask, what's a KP index?
It's basically, how do I describe it? It's like the Fujita scale, right? How like strong.
Oh, hell no.
Right, no. Greg? You know what we're talking about. So it's that for Northern Lights. How strong will they be?
These are supercharged. South? I see.
So, okay, I got two things. Will I be in any way, shape, or form be able to see in Kenosha?
I think Saturday night you have a better chance for those clouds clearing on out of here. I think northern and central Wisconsin has a better chance tonight.
Yeah.
But the clouds are going to be breaking up. It is going to be clearing out. So if you wake up really early and it's still dark, check it out.
And also when Pat was describing it somewhat, describing what was going on in his patway, he may seem more like apocalyptic. Like, hey,
I just want to know,
the Earth is going to die tonight.
Will we look like, you know, a bunch of human x-rays? Can I see Greg's bones, you know, by the time the solar flare is done cooking us?
I'm gonna call HR like real that? Quick here.
I'm not sure. You know, this happened, what was it, like I think a year or two ago. We had a KP index of 8. I was in Appleton with the city lights, and I was able to see it with my naked eye, and I was also able to take pictures of it on my camera, on my phone, and it turned out perfect. So on repeat. Bring it.
I will be on the lookout. That's awesome.
Hopefully without too much electrical interference for, you know, radios and things like that. So we will hope for the best and enjoy a nice weekend. Brittany, you do the same.
Thanks. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Thank you, Brittany. Appreciate it very much. Let's give away some Brewers tickets here. And here's how we're going to do it. Yesterday, we asked you to answer a question. And this time, we're going to give you a keyword. They both work the same way. You get the Civic Media app. And on there, you can listen to any of the Civic Media stations. If you go to one of the 7 stations that we're on right now, you can then use the text button on there and send a text to us. You can send it to WAUK in Waukesha, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, 93.5 The Tap here in the Chippewa Valley, The Eagle in La Crosse, Lake Erin, Amory, Buzz of the North in Hayward. All right. For any one of those, just text us the keyword, and then we're going to pick randomly from everybody who texts in today's keyword, and it is, in honor of Yacht Rock, today's keyword is smooth. If you just text smooth to us at one of those radio stations through the app or through our text line, you will be in the running. We are randomly going to select one of the texts that has the correct keyword. If it is yours, we will text you back to get an email from you for sending the tickets. And that's one of the stipulations, is that the tickets have to be emailed to you. It's all electronic over here. And please be sure you can use them. They're great seats, 4 tickets to Sunday afternoon's game, Brewers against the Cardinals. So work on that, text it over, and hopefully we can make you one of our winners. You have through 8 o'clock here to send us that keyword, and then we'll pick a winner after the show. And get in touch with you about the tickets, which reminds me, Greg, I got to scroll up and properly thank yesterday's winner. See if I have that here, or did you send it to me in a separate note?
I sent it to you in an email, but I know his name.
Oh, do tell.
Jesse Hellerud, listening in Dane County.
Okay. A Superior native, I believe.
Superior County native. Superior native, living in Dane County. Very cool. Won the tickets. Congratulations to Jesse. And that's, we hope, and then, they have a good time.
Oh, yeah. And then, like I said, Sunday afternoon's ticket winner, will pick that out after the show randomly from the texts that have come in. All right. On Monday, our guest is going to be Corrine Hendrickson. She runs a childcare center in New Glarus and has really taken the lead in helping other childcare providers and parents speak out on the ongoing childcare crisis. She's going to tell us how this is not something that just popped up during the pandemic. It's been brewing for a long time. But the pandemic really kind of exacerbated the situation. And there are some people that have been working to address and try to solve the childcare crisis, and others who, quite frankly, are saying to women, well, if y'all would stay home, you know, this wouldn't be an issue. And so we'll talk to Corrine more about that on Monday. But I wanted to play just a little bit of some audio that we got from our friend Kate Duffy at Motherhood for Good, which you now hear every Thursday at 7:30 as part of our Women Win Wisconsin segment. And I noticed something on the Motherhood for Good Instagram. Again, just go to Instagram and look up Motherhood for Good. And they have all kinds of videos and photos and graphics that about the issues that, you know, busy moms need to know about from the political world. And she did one, she did a video on what's called the care infrastructure. We've talked about infrastructure a lot, but, you know, not in the way that she does. So give a listen to what Kate has to say about care
infrastructure to get a good sense for what we're going to talk about more on Monday.
Yeah, we're talking more about care infrastructure and, again, trying to kind of reframe how people think of that. It almost ties back to what we were talking about earlier with people seeing some of these investments as handouts when it is not. I mean, I think a lot of our Democrats, especially like Calderoy's, have talked about childcare being similar to just as important as infrastructure like roads and bridges and transportation. The childcare industry and paid family leave are things that do not get the proper funding that they need. And we really want to make people aware that those are policies that can be changed when we elect the right people into office. So we're going to be talking more about care infrastructure and the care economy. And yeah, check out our latest video on that. And hopefully we're trying to make it a talking point that moms and caregivers and other people can be talking to their communities about.
And I don't know if you caught it when they joined us live, but Kate had her newborn, you know, with her. And you heard a little bit of cooing there at the end as somebody's trying to nap while somebody else is trying to do a radio interview. So I'm glad that worked out well. So much more coming up on Monday about that. So join us here on Up North News Radio for that. I got to go take care of some past business here because I forgot while we were talking with Brittany so much about Yacht Rock that we forgot to say good morning from Tigerton, where Rob says it's partly cloudy and 41. Got a tenth of an inch of rain yesterday. He says back in 1990 on this day, much of eastern Wisconsin got 5 to 8 inches of snow. He says, Jay Ferguson and Thunder Island was a great song. I remember it from the days when we had a radio in the barn doing chores. I liked that about my early radio days. There were a lot of radios and a lot of barns, and we would hear folks who early in the morning, you know, would want requests because, you know, happy cows make for happy farmers. Greg, do you recall this from a year ago as well? For the snow that fell? Not the radios in the barn.
The 1990 snowfall.
Or 1990, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I remember it. I remember it very well. I was going to St. Joseph's School right here in Waukesha. I got up, looked out the window, saw the ground was covered in snow, went into my mom's room and said, Mom, it's snowing. She goes, no, it's not. Go back to bed. I was like, well, what do I know? I'm 12. So I go back to bed and I wake back up to my mother saying, you got the day off from school today.
Nice.
Yeah. And then by the afternoon, we didn't shovel. My dad said, don't shovel. It'll melt. It's May. And it did. It melted by the afternoon.
How great was that?
It was amazing.
That's awesome. All right. So I 1990, I would have been living in Milwaukee at the time. And yet it's that memory is long gone already. I'm sorry to say. Oh, dear.
Loving the Yacht Rock.
That's right. You know, those are the things that stick in your brain. Actual memories with, like, I mean, I had a toddler and a newborn on the way.
Aww.
Remember that? No, not at all. Let's see. We got a lot of texts coming in with today's keyword smooth. One from the La Crosse area from Penny says, love your show. Thank you. Appreciate that. Now, Wisco Paul writes in, the state of Wisconsin still hasn't recovered from what Scott Walker did when he was governor. The road is just one example, Foxconn another. Thank you to Governor Evers. Let's see, we got a thank you again from yesterday's winner, and so many more texts coming in. So we appreciate that very much using the text function of the Civic Media app. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, is going to be joining us in just a bit. I should tell you that the Brewers, by the way, beat the St. Louis Cardinals last night 7-1. Homers from Reese Hoskins, Jake Bowers, and Joey Ortiz, and Christian Yelich went 3-for-4. So nice to have him back in the lineup regularly, and they will play again this evening. Catch the game starting at 6:35 for pregame on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh, and Park Falls. More after this live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're fine, you're fine.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this.
A reminder that you can get the Up North News daily newsletter by heading to our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Up North News is a separate entity from the Civic Media Radio Network, but we are so pleased, proud, and happy to be partnering with them for these 2 hours every weekday morning. Speaking of other shows on the Civic Media Radio Network, there's a fine one called Amicus, a Law Review. You can catch it live on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11, play it back on Sunday mornings on stations around Wisconsin, and it is hosted by former U.S. Attorney and our friend Jim Santel. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Pat, good to be with you once again. Lots of things happening in the state of Wisconsin, the United States of America, to chat about, right? Always.
My goodness. I mean, this started out as, you know, this little 10-minute segment here was a good way to just preview, you know, give people a taste of what's coming up on your show. But with the Trump trials and tribulations spinning all around us, I feel like I almost have to have you here for, the full 2 hours to try to get into all of the details. But we are not. We're not going to get into all the details because, frankly, we don't need to talk about the testimony of an adult film star. But we all know that Stormy Daniels testified as part of the Trump hush money trial. My question for you is this. After her testimony, there was cross-examination by Donald Trump's lawyers. How did they do in terms of, trying to damage her credibility with the jury versus what the prosecution was trying to do was reinforce the notion of what is alleged to have happened between Stormy Daniels and Trump?
I don't think it's just me, but folks across the country, I had this reaction immediately, as did others, which is it was almost a master class, Pat, in how not to do a cross-examination. Many, many things we could chat about, a couple of them that I noted in particular. If you've got a witness on the stand who's helping the prosecution tell a key part of the story, one of the things you want to try to avoid doing, it's sometimes impossible, but to have that witness repeat that story yet once again to reaffirm it in the minds of the jurors who might have been unclear about a specific detail, that's what they did. Along the way, one of my other, I shouldn't say favorite, because this is always, as we've said, human tragedy at the highest level. One of the other things that the attorney for Donald Trump quizzed her on, not with great success, many other things as well, she said at some point, well, you're making up all these stories. You're this porn star. You're in movies. You make up stories. That's the nature of your business. And Stormy Daniels said, yes, that's what we do in the movies. That's what movies are. But beyond that, she said, wow, if I really was going to make something up, I'd make up a better story than this one.
That was my favorite line from yesterday of saying, don't accuse me of making something up because it sure wouldn't be this story.
Absolutely. And, I think that does really resonate with jurors. People are responsible for finding the facts of a case just because they say, well, you're going to come in and make something up entirely simply for the purpose of getting back at this particular defendant or somehow settling some beef with him or her. You would come up with what we sometimes refer to as the big lie, not the big lie about the 2020 election or other things out there. But why not make up a whopper and come in and tell all sorts of things? In fact, what these witnesses are telling, every single one of them in the trial for this state, is a story about an imperfect world where things are not as compelling as they might otherwise be from start to finish. They're the key elements, yes, that the government's got to prove, but they're not these stories you go away with thinking, wow, that just blows this right out of the water. Just the opposite. They're imperfect stories. Why? Because life is imperfect. And even people who are accused of crimes, assumed not guilty until proven innocent, do things that are normal and even decent and common. And that's, I thought, a very compelling testimony from her. many of the things we won't get into, as you just said, sort of the name calling, if you will, other things that were a part of this. The judge did have to admonish her during the course of direct examination to be a little bit more clipped in her discussions. But all that, again, a very compelling piece of testimony. After a week ago, the testimony of Hope Hicks, which is also compelling.
And so the only other blockbuster witness I can think that maybe part of this would be Michael Cohen, the former fixer attorney. Is that likely? And I mean, that is still another opportunity for Trump's team to try to convince a jury that this wasn't illegal. But is that what we're expecting to happen?
Absolutely. He's almost got to be there. I always said that even Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, they really don't absolutely have to be there, but they do tell a part of this story. Michael Cohen does draw some lines here that have already been established, but he is sort of the linchpin, if you will, that puts all this together. And as for that, again, as we've talked before, Pat, you and I, let's hold on during the course of that testimony. This is a fellow, again, who's got a lot of baggage, a lot of things you can do if you do it well on cross-examination, a former defendant. He's been convicted of lying, all sorts of other things, lots of baggage, lots of hatred toward Donald Trump. That's going to be I shouldn't say a wild ride, but this is going to be a challenge for the prosecution, frankly, even for the defense, to keep him focused on what the case is all about. He is going to be a very interesting witness and a key. And then after that, anticipate there'll be some additional testimony, probably from other documents folks out there that we've seen, to kind of lessen the blow, if you will, of what will be Michael Cohen's fairly dramatic testimony.
Well, and I think in cases like that, where you have witnesses who could be helpful, but, you know, it's also very easy, in quotation marks, you know, to tarnish their credibility. But if you need to put them on the stand, I don't know what metaphor you'd use. I almost think of like a Formula One race where it's like it's going really fast and you better take care of all the twists and turns, because if you don't, you put up that witness for nothing.
Right, absolutely. And the jury is anticipating hearing. We've heard about Michael Cohen. You've got to put him up there. And the other piece of this, what you often said, much like the race car analogy that you just mentioned, Pat, is just this. You put up someone who once again tells a story. He's an imperfect witness, far from being anywhere near imperfect here. But beyond that, he provides a lot of important details. As Stormy Daniels did, he also has a lot of baggage here. And one of the things the prosecution's got to push back on is this notion that, gosh, these are prosecution witnesses. Well, here in closing, you're going to convict my client based upon Michael Cohen's testimony. And the answer, of course, is, well, these are Donald Trump's witnesses. These are the people that the defendant himself surrounded himself with. And the reason they have to be here is because they're the ones who know information about these charges. They're not our witnesses. They're his. I think it's a very compelling argument, which we'll hear probably in a couple of weeks.
I've got time to ask about one more case, and it's not going to be the Mar-a-Lago documents one, even though I think it is a scandal of epic proportions, the way that Judge Eileen Cannon is dragging her feet on that one. But we'll save that for another time. For the time we got left, the case down in Georgia, where, again, I remind people, Trump on the phone saying, I just need you to find X number of votes. But it's gotten so derailed by allegations against the district attorney in that case. What's the most recent development there?
Sure. So this is Fonnie Willis once again. And remember, Scott McAfee previously said, well, some appearance of impropriety, but no reason to take her off the case. And so she remains the prosecutor on this. The judge still presiding over the case, doing other things. Donald Trump, as is his right, has asked the appeals court to review that decision, not to remove her and her office from the case. Fascinating, interesting. And frankly, for those of us who are concerned about the course of justice, concerning, because the Court of Appeals, which has discretion to say yes or no, we will or will not take a case, has said, yes, we will take that case, which suggests that maybe, just maybe, we don't know for sure, might be interested in overturning it. If that is the case, that they are going down that road, a huge dramatic change in the landscape of that prosecution. At a minimum, right now, it delays well beyond the fall, well into 2025, any chance of a trial there.
And all you can do is have faith that justice will be done, just not as nearly as fast as we'd like it. Amicus Law Review, tomorrow morning, starting at 9. Jim Santel, thank you so much.
Pat, always a pleasure. Good to see you. Have a great week.
You as well. Mark Jacob next. You're up north.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Wisconsin vineyards know it takes a long time to establish those vines you depend on. Can you imagine having to tear them out? I'm PM Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. That's exactly what vineyards in California are facing today. Details on the way.
Time to get back in the fields again. Whether you need high-quality used equipment to get the job done, or you have planting or other farm equipment you would like to sell, Steffes Group is a nationally recognized leader in the auction business with over 60 years of experience. To find a sales representative near you or for a list of upcoming auctions in your area and nationwide, visit steffesgroup.com. That's S-T-E-F-F-E-S group.com, your auction leader.
California grape growers are facing some challenging economic times. Jeff Bitter, president of Allied Grape Growers in California, says his advice right now, rip out some vines.
The reality is we need to respond as a grower community by removing some acres. And that might not be the only response. It might not even be the best response, but it's a response that's going to right the ship the fastest. Our ultimate response would be to somehow increase demand, you know, through marketing and promotion, through positive messaging about the moderate consumption of wine and those types of things. But those things take for a long time for you to see results in those efforts. And so the quicker way to get to balance to where we can be economically sustainable as growers is we've got to remove some acres.
Jeff Ritter, he's the president of Allied Grape Growers in California. Their goal to rip out about 30,000 acres of established vines to get their total acres in California down to about 540,000. They are, like our Wisconsin microbrews, even some of our Wisconsin wine producers, facing a consumer population that wants to consume less alcohol or instead beverages that provide health benefits.
I look at this dairy cow, and again, it's the animal that I love. The things that this dairy cow can do and the way that she can produce milk, to me, there is no substitute for milk in the world. And to be able to keep cows and help cows produce that for people, to me, that's a privilege. I'm Dr. Bill Zimmer, nutrition and microbials, commonly called probiotics. That's BioVet. Learn more at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
And Wisconsin farmland value continued to climb. From April of last year to April of this year, the average acre of good farmland went up 10%, according to the latest survey from the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. One Wisconsin banker noted that there's just not much farmland that's coming up for sale anywhere in the state. There's your food news on a Friday. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Partly cloudy this morning, becoming mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Our high today, 64, with wind west to northwest at 5 to 15. Tonight, 39. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, 68. On Sunday, sunshine, little breezy, high of 75. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 31.
The Todd Alba Show.
The fantastic Jane Matt Nair of Matt Nair on Air. I'm a big fan of like the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. Well, now from Snoop Dogg, they're going to have the Snoop Bowl, the Snoop Bowl. How about that, Jane?
I think we're missing the obvious. Where's the Punch Bowl? Where's the Toilet Bowl? I think that there are other bowls that are being neglected.
I think it could maybe be the Snooper Bowl, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
We're going to have policy arguments for the rest of time. But at base, I want my president to be a decent person. I firmly believe that Joe Biden always is trying to do the right thing, that he is a decent man. And in sharp contrast, we've got a man who thinks it's a good thing that stars get to commit sexual assault. And we know that because he said it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
can't have enough Michael McDonald if you're doing Yacht Rock Fridays. It's just about 7:35 now on Up North News Radio. Time to visit with our friend Mark Jacob as we talk about the ways the media has covered the events of the week. And Mark's going to be especially helpful today because a lot of times I bring up things that, you know, he's been following, I've been following, and we just kind of bounce things off each other with a tone that says, I know, right? But instead, I actually have to, you know, get caught up on one of the big media stories of the past week because I just haven't had time to get too deep into what exactly was said by the executive editor of the New York Times and why, from what little I've seen of it, Mark, it is just a stunning example of how the media, even now, is still missing its actual role in a democracy when there is somebody that is a genuine threat to it. So, Mark, good morning. Take us through what the Joe Kahn controversy is all about.
Well, Joe Kahn is executive editor of the New York Times, has been for a couple of years now. And he did an interview with Ben Smith at Semaphore. That's a fairly recent startup. And so Semaphore says, well, you know, you've been getting the New York Times and you have been getting a lot of criticism for not campaigning for Joe Biden's reelection, for not, you know, taking that side. And what do you have to say about it? And which is kind of a stupid way to set it up anyway. But so Kahn says, well, you know, we're not going to do that. You know, we're going to be objective, and says that he really says that the concerns about the survival of democracy, the threat against democracy, is overblown. He says, well, it's not even the top issue. You know, the top issue is immigration, and then there's the economy below it, which, you know, he seems to be citing polls, but I went and checked, and the polls don't say that at all. And so he seems like he's paying a little bit too much attention to what Fox News thinks the number one issue is. So he said, well, you know, we're covering everything, but we're just not going to take the side of Biden. And the thing, Pat, that I've been trying to make clear, because I've been really criticizing the New York Times a lot lately, justifiably, in my opinion. And what I tried to make clear is that critics like me do not want the New York Times to start campaigning for Joe Biden. That's not their role. We don't want them to do that. It's just this false thing to think we do. What we want them to do is get serious about the threat against American democracy that is posed by the right wing. We want them to report on what Trump says. We want them to report on what Trump does. We want them to report on Project 2025, which is just laid out there explaining why they want Trump to be a dictator if he gets reelected. So that's what we want. I mean, that's the role of the press. And I feel like the New York Times saying that democracy, pish posh, who cares? You know, we're not worried about that so much, is an extremely alarming thing to be hearing from what supposedly is the number one newspaper in the country.
It is. And it is something I know we've talked, you know, generally about the subject for a long time now, but it wasn't even so much that, you know, he made the initial remarks, but then it appears that he and others at the New York Times essentially, you know, doubled down and at no point showed any awareness, much less contrition, as they continue to say, oh, look at these people who want us to be, you know, a democratic, you know, a press outlet or a progressive press outlet. And it just seemed like there's a culture there, Mark, that is not understanding, you know, the very people that they are covering.
Well, and I mean, I asked the question in my Stop the Presses newsletter, you know, a month or two ago, which is the New York Times neutral on the question of democracy? And you have to wonder whether they are. I mean, which is, to me, alarming. I would think that, considering how important the First Amendment is to the press and to, you know, to serving the public with real facts, you would think that they would, you know, that the press would think that democracy was an important thing to keep, not necessarily just for the industry's benefit, but for the public benefit, you know. And The New York Times, though, I mean, has this what I call performative objectivity, where they have to like seem like, well, you know, we don't know the difference between, you know, fascists and people who are pro-democracy, and we're going to give them both a chance in our news pages. New York Times had an op-ed the other day that had a headline that said, Trump embraces lawlessness, but in the name of a higher law. And it was all about how Trump is an outlaw hero, like those of America's storied past. And what? And it's, I just don't understand why they have to be that way. And Pat, when they're not being fair to fascists, they are also being trivial. You know, in February, when the New York Times was going after, was covering the business fraud trial of the Trump family, they did a page one story about the fashions that the Trump family wore in court. I mean, it was crazy how they were trivializing the whole thing. And I think that they feel like their job is just to, you know, just whatever anyone says, and to just report what's going on, and not to. And my view is that part of journalism, in fact, maybe one of the most important parts of journalism, is warning the public of a danger to their safety and well-being. And if reporting on the fact that there's a plan for a fascist takeover of this country is not something that the New York Times wants to warn us about, I don't know what they're doing.
Well, and part of the reason, to me, seems pretty obvious. It's because even though it's kind of a boy that cried wolf situation, in this case, the wolf figured out that if you start saying, you know, that boy out there is a danger, that boy out there is going to eat all the sheep, and people know that that's not true. Right. But then when the boy actually sees the wolf going after the sheep and calls it out, they go, oh God, now it's just both sides. They're both saying they want to eat the sheep. When Mark, it should be that a press outlet, nobody's asking you to be Democratic or Republican, but you also can't be completely detached. You have an attachment to the First Amendment. You have an attachment to the country, not a party, but to the country. And when there's a threat to the First Amendment, when there's a threat to the country, that's not taking aside for anything except your own existence.
Right. And the public's benefit. I mean, this is the whole thing that, you know, we can't take sides. Well, take a side. The side you should take is the side for the public, is the public benefit, is the future of democracy. I mean, isn't that a benefit to us as free citizens in this society? And I just feel like they've stepped aside. They've just decided, you know. And the thing about it, Pat, is that you get all this garbage about, well, the New York Times is a liberal newspaper. They need to not be so liberal. Oh, we need to stop them. They're just too liberal. Well, that's just working the refs. I mean, and they've been doing that for a long, long time to make, you know, and it works, I think. I think it makes the New York Times feel very uncomfortable about going after Trump and very uncomfortable about running certain op-eds and very willing to, like, put Kellyanne Conway on its op-ed page and stuff like that, because they think that makes them seem, look, we're not liberal. We really aren't. Well, they really aren't. They aren't. And I just think they ought to just have some values and live those values. And one of the values to me should be the defense of a system of government in which the people rule, not the big business types. You know, Pat, just to go on just a second and point out one other thing that is about not the people ruling is the report we had about how Trump, you know, talked to these oil industry executives trying to get, like, you know, big campaign contributions from him. And he said, you know, on day one, if you give me a bunch of money to win, on day one, I will, you know, I will go after electric vehicles. I will help you. And that, in effect, he's trying to put the government up for sale. It's just like it's one of those things. He's going to go to Sotheby's and auction off parts of the government. And we ought to be alarmed by this. And the fact that the New York Times wants to write a fashion story about the Trump family on page one is not being alarmed enough.
Well, and you're in Illinois. I mean, what comes to mind is the former governor there, Rod Blagojevich.
Oh, Pat, don't get me started on that. But you know, he was there at the RNC visit that Trump spoke at the Republican National Committee meeting a few days ago. An honored guest was Rod Blagojevich, a Democrat criminal who tried to sell a Senate seat and tried to shake down the president of a children's hospital here in Chicago. And suddenly, you know, well, you know, he was unfairly prosecuted. He was not. I was Metro editor of the, you know, Chicago Tribune and deputy Metro editor at the time that was happening. And I, you know, I was all over it. And he was guilty, guilty, guilty. And he's just a crook. And the idea that he's going to be like put out there as somebody who was a victim of government prosecution is outrageous.
I now can see Blagojevich, you know, even though he's a convicted felon, trying to run for office with Kyle Rittenhouse as his running mate. That's really where really where the party has gone. In terms of the whether they mean to have a double standard or not, I can't help but think of how many times there's been the observation over the past 2 weeks that Donald Trump has fallen asleep, that he has dozed off during his trial. And I think of all the stories that have been done about Joe Biden's age and, you know, cognition and why Trump, you know, again, if the roles were reversed, you know, if Biden were the ex-president running for president, I have no doubt the number of page one stories would be innumerable.
Yeah, it's just a different standard for Trump than from anyone else. You know, and I don't really quite understand why that is in the news media. I understand why it is in the public, you know, and I've written about that, about how Trump's followers, you know, want to be lied to and they want to overlook all the terrible stuff. You know, I mean, I don't want to demonize anyone. And I know people that vote for Trump are, you know, good people in many ways. Some of them are, at least, but they're doing a very bad thing. If they're going to vote for Donald Trump, they're doing a very bad thing. And I feel like what they have to do is, you know, what the psychologists call gating out, where you just put something outside your sphere of understanding or attention and you just ignore it. So I think there's this like intentional ignorance going on in which, you know, I mean, would these people who vote for Trump, would most of them like, you know, cheat on their spouse with a porn star? I'll bet not. I bet they wouldn't do that because they're not nasty people who do things like that. And but they forgive him for doing it because he says other stuff that they like and that makes them feel good about themselves.
Let's have a little lighter side now, and I hope you'll forgive me. I'm not going to ask this in the form of a question. I'm going to do it in a much more irreverent way. I'm just going to say the topic is media relations and you writing a book. And I'm just going to say South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, go. What do you got?
Well, you know, Kristi, I think we should really not include this portion about you executing your dog in a gravel pit. I don't really, you may think that it shows you to be a tough person, but it really shows you to be kind of a creepy person who, and it's going to offend people. You know, Pat, that she wrote a previous book and they talked her out of putting that in it. But she loved the story so much that she had to put it. And then she went on television over and over and over again to explain why it was okay. And why Joe Biden's dog should be executed too. So she doesn't just want to, you know, kill her own dog. She wants to kill other dogs. The funny thing about that is she's one of the few people who on the right wing that they've just given up. They've just, or even the right wing, even right wing media has given up on her and is just kind of throwing her to the wolves. But the thing that I'm convinced of is if Trump said he did the same thing that everyone would forgive him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Again, there's just a different set of rules there. But when you see Kristi Noem essentially, you know, blow up at right-wing anchors, there was Stuart Varney on one of the channels and like Newsmax or something else where she gets all defensive and the anchors, you can tell they smell blood in the water. But what it reminds you of is they actually do know how to do Q&A. They actually do know how to, you know, really press somebody in an interview. It's just that they decide the other 95% of the time not to do it because it's part of a business plan, if not a bias.
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, it's nice of you to be such an optimist about it. And I try to be an optimist, too. I think it does show that there is some sliver of decency and that there is a place that they will not go. And that's, you know, to murder your dog. Yeah. That they're not in favor of dog murder. That's so that we have found a place where they're in favor of, you know, January 6th and beating up cops to
try
to
overthrow women's
democracy.
Rights. They'll round up 11 million people, but dogs.
Yeah,
draw the line there.
Don't shoot your dog.
Get his newsletter at stopthepresses.news. Don't miss the video series with Stephen Beschloss, Media Misses. Mark Jacob, thank you so much.
Talk to you later.
Have a great weekend. Coming up next, Dan Schumacher on this Yacht Rock Friday on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wasota. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Never really was.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The weather impacts everything, and the history of windmills includes using the weather, in this case, the wind, to help mill grain and pump water. The modern windmills that you see across Wisconsin today are often called wind turbines. These still use the wind, but now it's to produce electricity. And a new study shows that turbines can also lower the daytime temperature while keeping it warmer at night. The moving air protects crops from frost. It's a weather-ready fact. And Saturday, May 11th, is National Windmill Day. If you really want to celebrate, save June 5th through the 9th, because it's Windmill Days in Baldwin, Wisconsin, a celebration of Dutch heritage and the windmills in the village. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Coming up on Monday, Corrine Hendrickson will be our guest to talk about a day without child care and calling attention to the ongoing crisis in the child care industry. So fair warning, there is a chance that if you use child care, that somebody may either be closing up their shop for the day or just saying or doing other things to call attention to the problem. Hope you take it seriously, because it is something extremely important. Dan Schumacher's here. He and Greg Bach find a little Grateful Dead to play with every week. What brought us in this week?
You actually stumped me. It's a Brent Midland song.
Yep.
But I don't know if it's a solo one or one with the Dead. I think it's a solo. It's one of his own albums.
This is a Grateful Dead tune. It's called Far From Me.
Yeah, I can't remember that one. Holy
it's
cow.
Off of Go to Heaven. And I found it because I typed in Grateful Dead Yacht Rock songs.
Yes. One for me. Welcome
one
to
for
Yacht Rock
all
Friday.
Of us.
Yes. One for all. A winner for
me.
Yacht Rock.
You got me.
Is a winner for all of us. Dan is, I don't know that I'd put Dan in the Yacht Rock category because, again, it's all Grateful Dead all the time. And there's not a lot that the Dead did that really qualifies as the light rock of the 70s. It's no. In its own little its own little world. It's not so much on a yacht as it is on a magic starship.
I was going to say, like, the Dead are more like, you know, a dinghy rock. You know, you're just hanging out there, foot over the bow and just fishing rod, just listening. Pontoon rock.
Somebody goes, hey, you forgot to put, you know, bait on your hook. Oh, that's okay, man. You know,
man, I didn't
forget. You cast your hook into the kid's swimming pool. That's okay.
I didn't forget, man. I just let life happen.
Jeepers. You know, the Cubs and the Brewers are doing well in the NL Central. He
what
said,
a transition. What a transition.
Before he gets hauled into HR. But the Central Division is not the same when the St. Louis Cardinals are this awful. And again, yeah. Usually it's like, oh, these Cardinals, they're always right there. It is weird to be in a phase where the Cardinals, forgive the language, but they suck. You know,
yeah,
it's not typical of that franchise at all.
When I think of the American League, I think of the Yankees, and when I think of the National League, I think of the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those leaders, constant leaders, and constantly competing for a championship. And it's not the case right now. I don't know what's the deal with management or ownership with the Cardinals. I don't know what the deal is, but they've been down for a couple of years now.
Last year was really bad. Like, it was, I mean, yeah. As a Brewers fan, you're just always waiting for the Cardinals to come from that middling position just mm-hmm. to snake you right out of first place. And last year, like, I don't even know if they're playing anymore. They might be a minor league team at this point.
So now that we've jinxed the rest of the series, I will tell you, the Brewers beat up on the Cardinals 7-1 last night. Home runs from Reese Hoskins, Jake Bowers, and Joey Ortiz. None of whom were names that I knew, you know, during spring training. That's how young and new this team is, but they can hit. They can hit. They can run. You know, not every night, obviously. Yelich is back from his sore back. He went 3-for-4. And so they'll play again this evening and again tomorrow night and then Sunday afternoon. But let's talk for a moment about the catcher, Wilson Contreras. and his broken arm. I was watching MLB last night, and the guys do their little nightly thing there, Harold Reynolds and the others. And mm-hmm. as they were doing the demonstration of how close some of these teams are making their catchers get to the batter compared to how they used to be, Dan, I was getting genuinely angry watching that any team, I mean, it's one thing if a catcher is stupid enough to sneak up on home plate like that and put himself in the swing of the bat. But if that's an actual strategy from a team, if that actually came from the manager, he should have been fired 5 minutes after that happened.
You know, they are taught, Pat, they are taught that when not every pitch, but the pitch that they say there's a guy in first and they're looking at stealing second, you see that every catcher scooches up a little bit right. in the box, almost to dangerous levels, but try to get a jump start on getting that ball away. To get to second base to try to throw him out. So I know there's situations where a manager will tell a
the other is the framing. Talk about the framing, you know, as well, where they jerk the catcher mitt just so it's not really an outside pitch. It really was in the zone, you know.
right. And you know, the batters. I'm surprised the batters don't complain more to the umpire while they're in the box, going, "Hey, man, he's so close." Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to happen. You know what? I'm surprised. This is the first time I think I've ever seen it happen. Where the guy breaks his arm.
Yeah. We had Paul Noonan on yesterday on Matt and Air on Air, and he's saying that this is a league-wide thing, that they're all just scooching forward. And I don't understand how the league can allow this. I mean, they might have to come in and be like, nope, you got to be here and no further. We can't risk. I mean, he's going to be out for 8 weeks.
Yeah. At least. Yeah.
It's your interference. They don't call it.
Well, and it also got into the subject of, you know, the umpire's right there as well. And with the catcher trying to frame it, what would eliminate that problem is if you went with the electronic, you know, the robot umpire, as I like to call it, you know, like they have in tennis, like they have in soccer. Mm-hmm. And they're apparently doing that in the minor leagues. That's the regular thing. I've not seen it in action yet. But I have certainly advocated for it because the umps have missed enough calls that, you know, if that next step is necessary, not only for accuracy, but now for safety, in my mind, all the more reason to get to it. But others will disagree. I understand.
Yeah.
Honestly, the umps this season have made a case for me to at least have someone behind home plate be taken out. Like, you're done. I still like having a guy on first and third calling, but this season it's just been nonstop shenanigans.
Honestly, it's like they want to be taken out. It's like they all bought stock in the robot umpire company, and they're just waiting for that to come replace them.
Angel, what's that guy? Angel Hernandez.
Angel Hernandez. Oh, useless.
He is the show. He wants to be the show.
Yes. Well, and he wasn't the only one. The one that tossed Freddy Peralta and everybody last week for the Brewers. Again, he made it all about himself. And there's just something's not balanced properly between the umps and the players. I'm not saying that they have to be, you know, gentle little, you know, kittens and never stand up for themselves, but something's out of whack here. That's where we're going. All right. Well, look at that. I've used up any time at all to ask Dan what he's up to, because again, he's busy trying to, you know, save a college and recruit and get coaches and players. And so
I hired a coach yesterday, hired a women's soccer coach. So if any listeners out there have daughters that are interested in still continuing with their soccer career, we could use some soccer players up at Northland College. So
there you go.
Did hire a great coach and long time history. Lucky got an alumnus and he's in our Hall of Fame, and
good deal.
He coached us women's soccer for like 10 years at Northland. So it's good to have Coach Olaf back. So it's
all right. Thank you, Dan.
You bet.
All right, Greg, thank you. Have a great weekend at the Laughing Tap. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you back here Monday morning for Up North News Radio, live from Lake Minnesota.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome wrestling announcer and big-time fan Rich LoCascio in studio. And host of Max Inc.'s Terry Barr joins us to talk about Saturday night's show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9.
The Hayward Muskie Festival, presented by Adventure RV and Power Sports of Hayward, has been selected as a finalist for the Cenex Hometown Throwdown Competition. Show your hometown pride and help Muskie Fest win the $100,000 grand prize by voting online at CenexHometownThrowdown.com. The Hayward Muskie Festival is hosted by the Hayward Area Chamber of Commerce. Join them at this year's fest, June 21st through 23rd, for a summer dose of Hayward fun. Remember to vote by May 15th at CenexHometownThrowdown.com.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.